Broadcasting from deep in the Yubla-Faris galaxy, on a small planet called Gekonia, east of the Albino Hills and south of the raging Leucistic River, comes the one, the only, Gecko Nation Radio.
Good evening, Gecko Nation. How's everybody doing tonight? Hope everybody's doing great. Tonight's going to be a really interesting show. Today is June 22nd, 2014. And one of the best things about doing this radio show is being able to talk to some of the most instrumental people in the community, whether it be new and up-and-coming folks with great breeding operations and businesses, or, of course, the living legends out there. And since I've become heavily involved in the gecko community over the past 5 years or so, I've heard the name Julie Bergman mentioned quite often. So it's going to be great to actually have her on the show tonight. And I am joined with none other than the cougar from San Francisco, Miss or Mrs., depending on how she's feeling today, Marcia McGinnis. Marcia, you are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
I'm alive. Wow, I'm alive on Gecko Nation. Good.
That's the, are you going by Miss or Mrs. these days?
Well, I don't know if a 60-year-old woman can get by with being called Miss. So.
Señorita.
Señorita, is that what you said?
I have to tell Mr. to not interrupt the radio program.
That's okay. How's everything going in the land of Golden Gate geckos?
It's going. It's just going. I'm still, I don't know. I'm going to be, after this particular season, going to be making a concerted effort to move a lot of my my breeders. And it's hard. It's hard to do. I think once I think I've made up my mind, then I change it. So anyway, I guess there's nothing that says I have to do it immediately, but I definitely want to start gearing up towards just keeping probably just a few of my favorites that are. Most of them are little old ladies, like not unlike the mean old gecko lady. Only these ones aren't mean, but it's been tough. So I've only produced like
a lot of trouble too, by the way.
I know it. I try to ignore her because you know when I start fighting with her back again, it seems like it fuels the flames.
Yes, absolutely.
And
she's just
mean and old. That's all.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I can't stop her. I can't, you know. She's like that gift that keeps on giving. You know.
she needs a man besides.
Besides Alejandro or whoever it is.
Or
that,
Alejandro.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine anybody being that interested in her in that way unless she's got a lot of money, which she may very well have.
They usually do. I think she's kind of bold, too. I think she may, I don't know, she said she's got some amazing geckos, so maybe somebody may want to get in on some of those genetics, but I don't know.
Well, I saw there was the Globino or Blue Bino,
yep.
And then there was the, the Tangelope. There was one other one, the Geck Glow. That was it, the Geck Glow.
Geck Glow. Yep.
Yeah, it looked like it was radioactive. Gosh knows what she did to get it to look like that. But but anyway, I'm hoping she's going to not rear her ugly head tonight because Julie would have to wind up getting her first experience with the mean old gecko lady. Although I know she can hold her own.
Okay, well, I don't think she's going to try to call in tonight, but I'll keep an eye on her. I won't let her in. I'll try to do my best. But
that would be great.
All right. Well,
so how about you, Dave?
Started...
How's things been going with you?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. Yeah, you know, Morris, everything's going good. It's like, it's that time of the year. It's kind of crazy. You know, the babies are hatching and the eggs are coming, and it's like a nonstop avalanche. You can't control it. And I'm kind of like at the point, too, where I haven't really made up my mind if I'm growing or if I'm staying the same size, but it just seems that I'm building a new rack every week just to keep up with the flow of babies. So,
oh, boy.
It's, yeah. I've been there. Yeah.
I've been there. And now I'm on now I'm doing just the opposite. How many racks can I empty permanently?
Right, yeah. I'm a long way off before I even start considering that. I'm too much of an addict, a gecko addict at this point, so...
Yeah, it's gonna be tough for me. So no, you got plenty of time before you're ready to retire.
Yeah, I had that opportunity too to take over the last couple of weeks, and I turned it down. I said nope, I'm sticking with my geckos, and I'm gonna ride this wave as long as I can. So.
Well, good.
It's a lot of fun. So. I wouldn't want to be doing anything
else.
Well, it is,
and it's also a lot of headache and you know, 18-hour days and stuff too. But it's but when you see that first little nose tip out of the egg for the season, it makes it all worthwhile.
And you know what's so great about the Gecko Nation group is the fact that we have so many new members coming in, and a lot of people are experiencing those first eggs hatching and those first eggs being laid, and there's just so much enthusiasm, and I love it. I love being around new people that are excited about everything. And
well, it kind of renews the passion and the happiness that we all have experienced. And I always remember my first hatchlings, always.
Yeah. What was
and that
it?
Was freaking, they were just little normal babies.
Mm-hmm.
But what had happened with me, it was weird because I there was really nothing to go by. Nobody told anybody or could read anywhere, you know, how to mix the ratio of water to vermiculite and temperature fluctuations, really. You know, so I wound up the first entire half of the season with, eggs that failed or moldy eggs and stuff. And then it wasn't until I totally gave up. I said, you know what, this is a bunch of baloney. I can't do this. And I left them alone and ignored them.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Out of the blue, one day I just decided to open. It was just one of those old hova baiters, you know. And there were two babies in there. And I sat in the middle of the floor with that deli cup in my hand and cried like a baby. I just couldn't believe it. So anyway, that's how I learned. I mean, like some people have a black thumb with plants. You know, they think if a little bit of water is good, a lot's better, and you wind up killing off your plants.
Right.
Well, I was doing that with the substrate medium, not to mention opening and closing the incubator. 5, 6, 8 times a day.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Which made for all kinds of temperature fluctuations. I look back and I can see as plain as day all the mistakes that I made, and I'm just glad that people now who are having such great success with their breeding projects and hatchlings and things, there's so much information out there and products and things like that it's good that they're having success so they won't get discouraged.
Right, right, and we got the group and everything else we're doing to keep people on the right track.
The group is great. The group is great.
Yeah.
It's a safe place for people to come and not feel like they're going to be, made fun of for not knowing everything. Of course, some of us are born knowing everything, such as some woman that we won't, whose name we will not speak. But, yeah, a good safe place to come and enjoy the group and share information and pictures and learn. And it's just, I'm just really, really pleased that, the Gecko Nation has been there and you've been there to provide this fantastic, you know, place for us to come and hang out.
Well, we're just getting started, Marcia. That's for sure. It's going to keep going. Let's jump into the show. And before we get started with the rest of the program, we have to hear a word from some of our amazing sponsors. And, folks, these are just some of the sponsors. The rest of them will be played in the middle of the show, and then all of them again at the end, I'll mention. So please check out some of these great breeders and businesses. And keep in mind, all of my sponsor plugs are sincere, and we're very picky about who gets to advertise and sponsor Get Donation. And these people really are some of the best people I've met and encountered in the industry and community. So check them out.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Ohio Gecko is famous for amazing tangerines, snows, and other very unique leopard gecko projects. Thad also has some incredible fat tail morphs available from stingers to starbursts. Visit him online at ohiogecko.com and at expos in the Northeast. He is also the owner of geckoforums.net. Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more, and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast expos. Contact them directly online at dalesbeardeddragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner. Supreme Gecko is a great source for crested geckos, day geckos, and other species, including micro geckos. Wally Kern is a top-notch breeder and gecko enthusiast. Visit supremegecko.com for his available animals and supplies. Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook. Rainbow Mealworms is the largest worm grower in the world and selling to the public since 1956. If you need the highest quality mealworms, superworms, and crickets for your pets, contact them at www.rainbowmealworms.net.
All right, folks, we are back. And, hey, Marcia, I've got a quick question for you.
Okay.
What is the absolute best forum for gecko enthusiasts?
The best, online forum other than...
be careful. There's
Facebook,
a
you mean?
Besides Facebook, what is our favorite forum for gecko enthusiasts?
Well, I would just have to say geckoforums.net.
That's right. You answered correct. Absolutely.
Oh, yay. Do I win something?
That's some canned laughter for you.
Okay. So I take that as a negative?
No, you don't win anything, but the community wins because it really is. I mean, how many years does that go back? I think since 2006 now.
Well, I was the second person registered on that website as a super moderator, and then I became the administrator for the website for several years. So yeah, it's been around for a while.
Yeah, and still going strong. I mean, I don't know. Facebook totally did steal some action from the forum world, but you guys can still, you know, really go back in the history there and see just where we've come from with leopard geckos in particular, and going back so many years now. And you know, Facebook is great, but you know, with Facebook, you make a post, you put information, and then 10 minutes later, like in a group that's busy like ours, that information's all the way down, you know, 5, 10, 20 posts, you know, buried.
Yeah.
The next day, somebody will ask the same question, and you got to rehash the whole thing again.
Well, that's true. So if you to use Gecko Forums, the best way to use Gecko Forums as a resource is to do a search. Chances are, whatever your question is or issue is, has been addressed at some point. That's really great that you're able to type in that. You can even do an advanced search for, you know, topics along those lines and do your homework before you post. In many cases, that your question has been answered or somebody else has experienced whatever you're experiencing that may be concerning you. Not only that, it's just a great place to post pictures, talk about the animals that you love, but I really think that the website is set up where people can research there on the forum itself. And again, it goes back to the very beginning, and some of that information is still just as good as it was back then. So go ahead and do your searches and stuff. And if your answers don't get if your questions don't get answered, then by all means, bring it up.
Rachel in the chat room says, yeah, Facebook is just another addiction outlet, Dave. I still love Gecko Forums, she said.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, the group is, the chat room is filling up nice. We got Brett, Justin, Justine. We have Brooke Pulowski, the lovely, talented logo designer. We have Mr. Chad Wenzel. We have Elsa. We have Mike. We have Marcy from MS2. We have Rachel, of course, and we have Sean from Heavy Duty Reptiles. And, of course,
right on.
Mr. Steve Barker.
And of course, Mr. Steve Barker.
And here he is.
Good evening, Gekkonians.
What's up, Steve? How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
That cracks me up every time he says that. I'm good. what's new in BC Barker land?
I'm just starting to hatch out leopard geckos, and I'm really psyched by the first two clutches.
I saw the video on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you have it on YouTube.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah. They might be all keepers.
Well, usually they are.
I get hooked, you know.
Well, we got to show you that there is life other than snakes, you know.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, and they just, either last night or this morning, just shed out. All of them did. And, oh, man, they look even better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And now they're ready to eat, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Any snakes yet?
Nope, just clutches waiting in the incubator.
Cool. How many snake eggs you got on the ground?
It's 14, I think. 13.
14 ball pythons?
Yep.
Nice.
I still have another 3 clutches at least coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Real cool.
So you're going to have quite a few little snakelings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking for a few holdbacks this year off the,
I'm sure
we'll
get them.
the pied clutch and the lesser and blonde pastel clutch. I might be holding back a lot of those.
So you think you're going to get any actual, any pieds, produce any pieds this year? Or?
I hope so. I bred het pied to a pastel het pied because my female pied didn't put on enough weight and I didn't want to risk it, so I didn't breed her this year. But I'm really hoping to hit on that pastel pied. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. What you got for us in the news, bud?
Okay. Well, I just found this on Facebook from one of our sponsors, Marcy MS2 Sours. I saw a little debate on Gecko Nation, I don't know, a few days ago about water crystals. I don't know if you guys saw that on there. Using them for dubia roaches, and that they could eat the crystals after the liquid has been, you know, taken out of them, and that the way I understood it, when one of our geckos eat it, then they could basically blow the gecko up. So I use water crystals for my dubias.
I do too.
So that, you know, they have moisture all the time. Then they also get fruits and vegetables besides that.
Yeah.
But just so they have moisture all the time, I use them. Well, Marcy did a little experiment here. And like I said, it was posted 1 hour ago, so I just found this. And she says, I put the same amount of water crystals in each portion cup to simulate stomach acid. I didn't have hydrochloric acid or muriatic acid, so I went with things commonly around the house. I used lemon juice in one cup, white vinegar in another, and apple cider vinegar in another. I set the timer for an hour, and you can see the results. There's results in the pictures. This is right in the Gecko Nation Facebook page. And I lost my place. Only the largest crystals remained. I do not think water crystals pose any impaction risk. I think that once they pass through the insect's digestive tract and the reptiles, they are essentially gone. One study in 1997 by Kansas State University showed that they were linked to cancer, but another study in 1999 by the Nalco Chemical Company could not reproduce those same results. It is the same substance used in part to make contact lenses and in cosmetic and reconstructive surgery for facial filler.
You know what else they're used for?
What's that?
Diapers.
Oh, really?
Really?
Wow.
That makes sense.
Diapers. Those diapers that are really nice and lightweight and that kind of thing have a whole lining full of water crystals in them. So as the child, you know, urinates and wets it, they swell up, which it wicks the moisture away from the child's body. And it's, of course, between layers of, absorbent material. But the downside to this, and I am speaking from direct experience with my grandchildren. If you don't get them changed right away, those water crystals swell up really big. And the next thing you know, you've got a little toddler running around that looks like he's got a load in his pants that's been there for a month. You know, but yes, it's water crystals. They are using those in diapers. So I really don't think that if it was a carcinogenic material or that it, you know, that it would be endorsed to be held up against, you know, baby and toddler skin.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, they tell them they're discussing all the other uses for these products and getting kind
of close.
But
that's actually pretty ingenious. Think about it.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of gross too, but yeah.
Well, you know, but we're all reptile breeders. Anything that has to do with bodily excretions doesn't really faze us that much anymore. And especially parents and grandparents, it's just kind of like,
Unfortunately, my grandmother had Alzheimer's, so. Yeah, there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on towards the end, unfortunately. But it's crazy business, that's for sure. I don't even want to think about
That's a really interesting, quick experiment that she did.
Yeah.
You know, just to get us to thinking. Who is it that's claiming that the water crystals are not good or are causing impaction?
I can't remember. It was a couple of days ago I read that. on the Gecko Nation Facebook page. I'm not sure. I'm scrolling down and I'm not finding it right offhand. But
I think the same could be said of, you know, like lay boxes or humid hides that have vermiculite in them.
Yeah.
You know how, I mean, geckos lick everything. All right.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you know that they've ingested it because when they poop, it looks like little gold nuggets that come out, you know. But here's the thing about water crystals and vermiculite and things like that. When they're dry, they're hard and crunchy. But when they're wet, even though they do swell up, they're extremely soft. So, and I've never seen them stick to each other. The water crystals really get so to the, unless they're almost dry. But I would think it would be easy to pass. But that's just a guess on my point.
Okay.
Very, very cool experiment, though. From one of our sponsors.
One of our beautiful, amazing sponsors. I call her my Alaskan Aries queen. That's what I call her. That's Marcy.
Yeah. Very cool, though. All right.
Good job,
Marcy. Like I said, I just found that.
Cool.
So we'll get to the other stories then. Let's see. Willow Smith and Jaden Smith, which are son and daughter to Will Smith.
Yep.
Actor Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
This article kind of reads like a shocking kind of article. Will Smith and her brother Jaden allow their pet snakes into their bedrooms. Which, too, so. Willow is obsessed with snakes, and Jaden cuddles with them in bed. Willow has 10 snakes sleeping in her room, and some are in cages. Some aren't in cages. Willow welcomed her first boa constrictor, Beauty, back in 2008 when she was 7 years old. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. What do you mean there's some snakes that are not in cages? I don't get that. You gotta have
cages, it
right?
Says they're, and some aren't in cages. They are not in cages. That's what the article says. It doesn't say, you know, how they have them in there or anything, but...
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. But that's cool. You know, I'd like to see more celebrities.
Well, they're
so
rich. I bet you they have big room size stuff for things, too, so maybe that's what they need.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And for our, I don't know how to put it, but... idiot? I don't know. Sorry. A sulfur man.
We could say douchebag. That's not a horrible word, is it?
Okay. Well, I'll go with it.
I don't think it's a terrible word, but that pretty much sums them up. But yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, in Sulfur, Louisiana, a man went toe-to-toe with an 11-foot alligator, leaving him with 80 stitches in one hand.
Now, oh, my goodness.
Now, there's a video, and this is what they claim. They claim there's three of them. They claim they were trying to get the gator off the road. 11-foot alligator, okay? And so their idea was, they were going to throw their shirts on top of its head so it couldn't see. They were going to jump on it. Now, if you're going to get it off the road, what are you going to do when you jump on that alligator? You know? Really? What are you going to do? How are you going to get it off the road if you're sitting on it? You know? I watched the video a couple times. I mean, to me, they were just playing with that thing. Honestly, that's a
tackling it.
Yeah. And, you know, one of them looked like he was actually trying to pull it off the road because he had it by the tail and it was moving backwards. Now, that would have made sense to me. But to be trying to, you know, jump on this thing. It's just... All right, so I think... leave it alone.
Definitely a douchebag.
Yeah, come on. Poor alligator.
Well, they're lucky they didn't get injured.
Well, he ended up with 80 stitches in his hand.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, seriously injured. I mean, 80 stitches is a lot.
That's a love bite.
But I was going to say, that's nothing compared to, you know, a gator that size, you know, versus man, the hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah.
That's just dumb.
Yeah, it is. Yep. Exactly. That's what I should have. That's what I should have started with and ended with.
That this is just dumb.
Yeah.
That you can't. Dumb. You can't fix stupid. Remember.
Yeah.
Jesus.
All right. And unfortunately, this is just horrible. The giant tortoise, Lonesome George, was found dead on Sunday at the Galapagos National Park.
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah, this is horrible. Lonesome George was believed...
This is a new one on me. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, this you're going to be really upset. Lonesome George was believed to be the last living member of the Pinta Island subspecies and had become an ambassador of sorts for the islands of Ecuador's coast, whose unique flora and fauna helped inspire Charles Darwin's ideas on evolution. The tortoise's age was not known, but they believe he was about 100 years old, and scientists had expected him to live another few decades. Various mates have been provided for Lonesome George after he was found in 1972, and in what proved unsuccessful attempts to keep his subspecies alive. He was the last of that species, that subspecies.
Mm.
That is just horrible. Horrible.
Yes. That's devastating.
Yeah.
To our ecological basis and foundation of the entire world.
Well, I hope they. I'm sure they took. Well, here's the flip side to that.
They've got DNA.
Yeah, and I think in the next couple of decades, if we get our act together and we clean this planet up, the technology will be there where we can resurrect some of these species. You know, the whole concept behind Jurassic Park is completely plausible. We could totally
do
that.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, if anybody thinks that's just a sci-fi movie, you know, read the book. It's actually, you know, it's amazing. That I'm surprised, you know, it hasn't been done already. Put it that way. And who knows? Maybe there is some secret place where they're working on stuff like that. You never
know. I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but to resurrect some of these species like the dodo bird and the woolly mammoth and now this subspecies of tortoise, that would be a terrific thing. And if I could get another go at you know being alive, I would want to be involved with something like that. You know,
exactly.
That just sounds so exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know much about. I know about artificial insemination and things like that in mammals, but I wonder if they. I just wonder with cold-blooded animals if semen can be harvested, so to speak, I guess, and preserved for to inseminate eggs. From, you know, like a similar species female.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it sounds interesting, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of extracting and preserving, you know, the sperm. Or even ovum, for that matter, in reptiles or any other cold-blooded species. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, geez, was that the last story?
Yeah, and it leads us into our herp history.
Well, hold on. Check this out. That's the time machine going back into herp history.
All right. All right. The Charles Darwin Foundation for the Galapagos Islands was founded under Belgian law in 1959, and for over 50 years, it has provided unique scientific solutions to protect the Galapagos Islands. And since, let's see, 1974, the tortoise population, giant tortoise population, was about 3,000 as a result from the decimation after the arrival of humans. Their population went down to 3,000. Since then, they have brought it back to 20,000 today.
Wow.
That is huge. And to add to give another herp history with the Charles Darwin Foundation, they founded the Giant Tortoise Repatriation Program in 1965. It's a world-class program that continues today. So
nice.
That is cool. They brought it all the way up to 20,000. You know, and
that is cool.
Yeah,
we can do this.
Absolutely.
We as a society of human people, the guardians of all other species on this planet, we can do this if we just decide to do it.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow,
right.
That's amazing.
Julie's been on hold for quite a while, guys. Let's move things on a little bit. Steve, we got to get Millennium Farms on again.
I know.
Any update from them?
No, and I still haven't received my shipment either. So I got to get a hold of them and see what's
all
going
right.
on.
Maybe we should give them a phone call. What do you think?
Yeah, probably. I'll try and call them tomorrow.
Okay.
See what's going on, and I know you guys are anxious to see me eat bugs, aren't you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, many cultures eat insects for their high protein content.
Yeah.
This is very common in the world. Actually,
I'm kind of a little germophobic, but I don't know. It doesn't really seem to bother me. You know, I don't know. It's just weird. Maybe because I feed them so much to my geckos. I don't know.
Well, who knows? Mealworms and dubia roaches may be a future life-sustaining staple for all of us.
I figure if it's good enough for them, you know, it's got to be good enough for me.
Right. Right.
Exactly. All right. Well, cool. Hey, Steve, I want to thank you very much for the news, and we'll be in touch. Let me know what comes up with Millennium Farms, and I'll shoot you some available show dates tomorrow afternoon. How's that sound?
All right. Great.
Really?
Right,
thanks
so
a lot,
much,
Steve.
Bud.
Thank you, Marcia.
Awesome. All right, Marcia, you know Julie much better than me. Why don't you introduce her, and I'll click the button and bring her on.
I would be privileged to introduce my friend and my compatriot, my peer, as well as my without any further ado, I would like to bring on my friend and my friend Julie from Gecko Ranch, who has a lot of titles past her credits, as well as being an author of a few reptile-related books, countless publications and articles she's written. Was the president of the Global Gecko Association before it kind of went underground. She works with so many species of geckos, and I've had the privilege of going up to Gecko Ranch and staying there for a weekend and seeing everything that she's got and you know, helping with the regular maintenance and whatnot. But One more thing, though. Julie's a race car driver. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But you know what? Julie's awesome. And so without any further ado, I would really, really love to have my friend and my, you know, and my confidant in many ways come on and talk about some of the things that she's been working on.
Okay. Julie Bergman, you are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, guys.
Hi,
hey,
Julie.
So how's everyone
tonight? You're a legend out there. Doing good. You're like a legend in the community. You know that. Every once in a while I hear Julie Bergman, and I'm like, well, who is this chick? And we finally got you on the air.
Aw. Well, I'm definitely honored, and I'm so honored to, you know, get the positive feedback from my good friend and, you know, essentially family member, Marcia.
Oh,
you
Julie,
know,
that's sweet. we are sisters. We are sisters of a different parentage.
Indeed.
Well, that's cool. For the most part, I'm gonna jump in a little bit, but I'm actually gonna let you girls do most of the interview tonight because you guys know each other really well. But, Julie, what we normally like to figure out is, you know, basically how you got started and your interest in herpetoculture, and then more specifically with geckos. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of your accomplishments along the way.
Well, I'll be happy to.
Awesome. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Anytime you want to start.
Okay.
So, there's always the standard, you know, the cliche, you know, how long have you been doing this and what got you started?
Yeah, well.
You know, although that's very interesting, and I think that people need to know, and I'm hoping that can come up in our conversation tonight, but I would like you to talk about yourself, and I know you're not accustomed to doing that a lot.
I think
that if people could get to know you as you know, an extremely influential leader in herpetoculture, what would you want them to know about you, Julie?
Well, that I share with them a passion for the hobby / business, and you know, they're getting the proper care information for the animals out there is the number one priority, and so everyone can have fun and have a good time. So it's all about networking and sharing information.
I couldn't agree more. So vouching for you, and I think that's one of the reasons that you and I were kind of aligned. We were aligned with the way we thought and felt and our ethics and things like that. And I think when people have similar values, it, you kind of are drawn to each other.
Mm-hmm,
but
absolutely.
I also want to say to those that are listening, that you guys think I've been around for a while? Well, guess what? Julie's been around several more years than I've been around as a pioneer. And not being sexist, but as also as a woman in herpetoculture. And how has that affected me personally? Well, I've developed a lifetime friendship with Julie, but my first experience with her, and you're going to laugh, Julie, because I always bring this up.
I'm already
laughing. Julie taught me. Marcia McGinnis from Golden Gate Geckos, Julie is the one that taught me how to sex a leopard gecko.
That's great.
I know. You might think I was born knowing that, but that's not true. Julie knew a lot more than I did before I even got my first geckos. So, and has been a wonderful resource of information and passion and love for these animals. So
Julie, was Marcia one of those pain in the butt newbies asking all kinds of crazy questions and bothering you 24/7?
No, not at all. She was really fun to deal
I'm
with,
joking,
and she was so cute and enthusiastic when she came with the cage of leopard geckos, and I go, "Oh, some nice girls you have there." And she thought,
I hadn't even taken
she
them out of their
voice.
Keeper yet, and she knew they were female.
Yeah, it was really cute. We had a nice laugh, and we continued to laugh about it how many years later.
What? Well, 19 years, you know.
Yeah.
Since 1994 or 95, I think we're close to 10 years. That might have been about 10 years ago, I think. I don't know. It was at the Cow Palace in San Francisco.
Right. And it was the start of a beautiful friendship, and I'm just so appreciative of that, and we've taught each other a lot.
Yes, we have.
And
well, and I think
that
what makes you special too, Julie, is that you believe in sharing information.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that that's important?
So the animals benefit and thrive, in captive situations, and if they do that, then everybody has a good time. You know, if you don't get the proper information, how are the animals going to thrive? And you're not going to have a good time because you're going to be trying to figure out, what the heck you're doing wrong, and to be puzzled. So, I don't want people to make all the mistakes that I did before there were books. And, there are basically only a few interesting scientific articles that dealt with gecko husbandry as a side. Like, the first article I ever came across was a leopard gecko husbandry article written by some cancer researchers, because they used the leopard gecko for cancer research because their skin was similar to human skin. And so they were used. And they said, well, this is how you set them up, and this is how you keep them, and stuff like that. And there was only a few rudimentary books at the time
mm-hmm.
out. So,
and certainly,
so that,
and certainly no internet influence.
Oh, yeah, no. And, I'd be scraping the calcium off the cuddle bone.
Yeah.
That was how they got their calcium, back in those days, And so, yeah, nowadays it's so much easier, so much, much better. And there's books and, I have to, pitch a word out to some of my mentors. My main mentor was Sean McEwen, who was a curator at the Fresno Chaffee Zoological Gardens, and along with Ron Tremper, coincidentally, who was also
curator. I was going to say, didn't he succeed Ron Tremper?
Yes.
In
yes.
that position?
So,
yeah, right.
So Sean, kind of adopted me and showed me how to get all this great, care info, and I called him up when he was working there because I wanted to learn about the day geckos, So he's like, this kid, So he didn't know I was serious. So I could see myself turning into him a little bit. It's like, oh, the Lord was like, is this, are they serious? So
how many different species do you work with, Julie? I mean, I would say the majority of people that listen in on this program, have, more than one gecko species that they keep or work with, primarily being, crested leopards, fat tails, and some Felsuma species. But, I've been a guest at your gecko ranch. I've been a guest at your home for entire weekends. And coming into your going into the Gecko Ranch and seeing what you have, or was better than going to Disneyland for me.
I thought so too. You know, I remember the first shows I went to. I thought, well, you know, Disneyland sucks compared to this stuff.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I've been back there ever since.
So what percentage of the the geckos that you work with and breed are leopard geckos compared to other species? You know, if we can get like a ratio kind of a thing or a numbers kind of a thing, just to give our listeners the idea on how vast your collection is, and along with that, how vast your knowledge is of all of these different species who have completely different, you know, indigenous care and food and husbandry and environmental conditions and everything.
Right. So leopard geckos are probably about 30% of what I do. So, so the other components of the collection would be, you know, arboreal species such as the day geckos, like you're talking about. That's my number one, you know, priority and love of geckos.
That's your heart, isn't it?
I love the Felsuma. You know, that's why I called John McEwen, because he had been to Madagascar and collected them and seen them up close. And I also get a good deal of information from other people who have been there, and a friend, Emmanuel Van Hagen, a wonderful collector and head man at ExoTerra, has been to every island that has had Felsuma on it, and we have had extensive conversations about, you know, the husbandry of Felsuma and their specific environmental conditions.
Environmental in the field, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's been super important to people that collect but haven't been to the natural habitat. So you really, really value that situation, that information, you know. So that has helped a lot with the, you know, all the geckos I keep, and I try and keep in touch through the network with people who have actually been there, you know, been to the environments and stuff. So that is indeed really, really a tenet of the what I do and how I do it. And that was a nice thing about the Global Gecko Association while it existed, because there was authors there that had been to those places, and, you know, so it's like getting it right from the horse's mouth.
Oh, a wonderful resource from around the world of indigenous gecko species. Unbelievable.
You can still purchase the journals, you know, from the GGA, the back issues and stuff, which there's, you know, should look through and, you know, see what the heck is there. But, you know, so any place you can get information is good, you know. So the forums and now, it's a shame that the GGA, you know, no longer exists, really, you know.
Yeah.
Because that was a wonderful resource. It wasn't supported, you know. Cost of publishing, you know, journals went up, and people just didn't, you know, they didn't want to, you know, support any price increases of the, you know, membership costs. So that was that. That was basically it.
There was also some internal, resistance
there,
and stuff, because, you know, we all tend to be stuck in our ways, and somehow, some ways we think, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
And then, you know, some people are really reluctant to, you know, bring on new ideas, new fresh ideas on how to promote things or how to present things and, you know, and that kind of thing. And so, you know, and it's a shame, because you're right. I mean, what a fantastic resource.
Indeed. So people have to rely on the senior people now, you know, that are available on social media, and you know, if you go through breeders, you know, like myself or yourself, you know, they'll talk to people at length, you know, and make sure they also get the proper reading materials.
Yeah, I think that's really, really critical.
Yeah, I mean, you need to do as many sources as you can get, you know, the breeder, the books, the forums, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, but keep in mind, just because you read it on the internet doesn't make it gospel.
Definitely.
But still, it still gives people the ability to make, informed decisions and come up with their own extract. If you can glean X amount of, you know, truth or validity out of everything that you study, then you will have a very good foundation at that point.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just, you know, put your heart into it, and it'll be fine.
Hey, Julie, I'm really interested in a lot of the history with leopard geckos in particular. And when you were coming into it, what was available back then, and what were you working on? What were some of the projects you were evolving, so to speak? What was the big thing back then?
The big thing was any sort of like oddball pattern, you know. So, you know, I think we were just starting to get jungles when I went to look at Ron Tremper's collection in Texas. During the International Herpetological Society, which is also a wonderful organization, by the way, if you want to get some firsthand education, you know, try to attend the conferences there all over.
Was that with the one in Dallas or Austin?
That was the one in San Antonio.
Oh, San Antonio. Okay.
And where Ron is near, his facility is near.
Yeah.
Of course I had to go there. because Ron was, you know, I knew Ron from California anyway, and, you know, just was dying to see his new facility out there, the 7,000 square foot, you know, Disneyland of leopard geckos, basically. So
right.
Went out there to see him, and he taught me how to look at them, you know, what to look for sharp color patterns and contrasts and stuff like that. And we've picked out probably around 8 or 9 animals, maybe more, that we thought would be good for my projects. And from these animals came really large leopard geckos, which he says, you know, this group 9 that I have, you know, I give them these group number names most of the time, but this group 9, you know, kind of normal looking, but nice normal looking, produced really large geckos, because Ron kept coming over to the table at the shows and said, hey, you know, that group, I'm sure that's where the giants came from, you know, from those, you know, they definitely have the look, you know. And I was like, okay, cool, and they are big. And then there was some of the morph names I came up with for some of the things that came out of the oddball, you know, marking stuff that I got from him, was like the circle back, because it had a circle on the back, and there was a saddle back.
I was going to say saddle back, right?
Saddle back, right. And then there was the, there's another name I came up with too, I'm trying to think of. But the circle back and the saddle back were ones I came up with. But, you know, it just describes what it is. Nothing fancy there, but.
But they they were reproducible.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so
they
it wasn't like it was just a random mutation that popped out of these animals. I mean, this was.
Right.
This was a real real genetic aberrancy.
Mm-hmm. And it was
as far as pattern goes.
Yeah. And then from there, then the jungles, you know, started getting, you know, really nice. And I'm still interested. I still work with the jungles, and I've got a bandit, a new bandit male this season. I'm growing up. to breed with some of these that I've been breeding throughout the years, you know, from Ron's genes. So most of my leopard geckos have Ron's genes, you know, plus some of yours and Marcia's and some people that aren't around anymore that produced tangerines and carrot tails.
Mostly. So you have some of those really old lines then too, I would gather, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Classic.
Classic guys. Yeah. And
classic.
Classics. I really like the way the normal look. And I have some that come out really nice. You know, that just they're usually really big and they just have that nice wild look about them. That people really like, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of back to the basics kind of stuff. But I like it, you know. And
well,
I
Julie, there
around.
Is a there is a trend now. I mean, of going back to basics. You know,
that's,
for so many
good.
Years we spent as breeders trying to breed the pattern out of our geckos.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I think one of the people that you may be talking about was like Ray Hine in the UK, who wound up. He is the actual creator of the quote unquote carrot tail. Now,
mm-hmm.
for all of you new people out there, Julie and I, back in those days, a carrot tail was a completely separate morph than a tangerine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
As a matter of fact, they were kind of a pale, pasty, yellowish, kind of a ghost-looking body color, but they just had incredible orange tails on them. And then, of course, morph-making started, and we came up with the super hypo-tangerine, which didn't really have much carrot tail influence. And then the combination of those two, some people would claim that they were genetic. Well, they are genetic, but line bred versus selective bred, who knows? But, and like you said, Julie, there's a lot of people who contributed in tremendous ways to today's leopard gecko, you know, keeping or breeding.
Mm-hmm.
That may not even be heard of because they're
that's
gone.
That's what's fascinating to me. Yeah, and you know, that's what, you know, Julie and Marcia, both of you, this is for both of you. Have you ever thought about collaborating, not with just each other, but also other people from the past? I think Ron would be excellent. And to try to construct some kind of written history of all this stuff. I mean, when I hear about what you just talked about, it may not interest everyone, but to someone like me that is really interested in morph making especially, you know, this information is like gold to me. Like just to hear about how, you know, the carrot tail was separate from the tangerine. I mean, that's so cool.
Oh, yeah, it was a completely separate entity, yeah.
Did you ever think about collaborating and writing something perhaps?
Julie and I have talked a lot about collaborating on several things, and I think that the road to success is full of all kinds of distractions.
Well,
yes,
that's true.
That's true. That's true.
But I think it's important because you know, and this show isn't about me; it's about Julie. But I think what I'm trying to say is that it's very pertinent, and it does correlate that. Some of us, quote unquote, they call us the old school. Oh, they're old school breeders. Oh, they're old school morphs. And I'm like, well, what the heck's wrong with being old school? What's wrong with that? So what I wanted to do was get away from the old school mentality and rebrand these animals as classic morphs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The classics.
Yeah, this history is going to get lost. Everything data passes by, you know, we forget a little bit. You know, and I am one of those people that believe that leopard geckos are going to be huge in the future. It's going to be, I mean, it's big now, but it's going to be a huge thing someday. It may
I think they'll be just totally mainstream, yeah.
Right, exactly. Leopard geckos are going to be that thing that makes herpetoculture mainstream one day. So this history is important to the future, and it needs to be documented somehow. And, you know, you guys, you ladies are some of the people that need to do that. Even if it's just you write down your own experiences and type it up into some form of, you know, essay or something. It's valuable information, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So are you going to do it, or are you just going to forget it that I even mentioned it?
We'll discuss it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll
I want to hear, Dave, that's an excellent idea. We're going to start. We're going to go to work on that right away.
Oh, Dave, if I had your energy.
I wish I had the energy I had 10 years ago, I'll tell you that much. But, well, hold on. Folks.
But I do think the history of leopard geckos in captivity is an extremely important topic. And
yes,
Julie and I have an appreciation, a deep appreciation. Call it nostalgia. I don't care what you call
it. It is nostalgia.
Call it anything but old school. to appreciate these animals, there is another breeder, a husband and wife team in Louisiana, which is K&N, Kevin and Nicole Ellister. They still have some of the original David Nieves lines of tangerines.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the original ghost and rainbow morphs that the ghosts came from David or from me Mr. Hine in the UK and stuff, because they also believe that these, you know, incredible creatures who have been used to create the mutts that we have now. And that's what we have, is a bunch of mutts. Don't get me wrong. Mutts make excellent pets.
They're
beautiful. They can be, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so I'm not putting down, I'm not in any way, I know that sounded pretty harsh. I didn't mean for it to come across like that, but I mean.
They're mutts in a sense, but they're also, you know, finely, selectively bred over many generations, too, so. You know,
right.
Yeah.
They are.
Right.
You know,
right.
There is a lot of work that went into them. Ladies,
so,
I gotta take a quick break here. We gotta play a sponsor plug and
break time.
Come right back. And we'll continue
here
in just a second. All right. Okay. Hang tight, folks. Check out these awesome, amazing sponsors. I love each one of them.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Ron Tremper is the biggest contributor to leopard gecko morph making. Known worldwide for his amazing examples of living art, you can now download his Leopard Gecko Care app, his Morph Encyclopedia app called Leopard Gecko Pro, and visit his site, leopardgecko.com, to see where morphs are made. GiantLeopardGecko.com specializes in giant and super giant leopard geckos with a focus on selectively bred exceptional lines of many different morph combinations, including high-end African fat tails and crested geckos. With over 17 years of experience in herpetoculture, Keith Kiggins brings you quality, integrity, and value. Check out GiantLeopardGecko.com on the web and on Facebook. Reptiles Express is the absolute best live animal shipping company, with great low rates. Debbie is the queen of customer service and will make sure your precious cargo gets to where it needs to. They also have a wide array of shipping supplies from deli cups, snake bags, heat packs, and more. Visit reptilesexpress.com and become a member today. And if you're looking for quality food for your dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. using only vegetable proteins and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact ms2ent.weebly.com, or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons. abdragons.com is your source for the highest quality dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. abdragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out abdragons.com online and on Facebook.
And speaking of AB Dragons, folks, I'd like to remind everybody that AB Dragons has a standard discount of 5% off for Gecko Nation Radio and Gecko Nation followers. The discount code is GECKO, all in caps, and you know use that at checkout when you buy your Dubia roaches and your FlexWatt. Okay? It's called GECKO, 5% off with AB Dragons. Also, like to remind everyone to check out Herpentine Radio. If you guys like a diverse range of different herpetological or herpetocultural type topics and breeders and discussions, check out Herpentine. Justin and JD are on every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, and we're back with Mrs. Julie Bergman, or Miss Julie Bergman, and Marcia McGinnis, Golden Gate Geckos. And ladies, Julie, before we jump back into more of the conversation, I'd like to, you were talking a little bit about giants in the first half, and today there's not controversy, but there's some differences of opinion about the giant gene and exactly how it works. Like, for instance, some breeders think that it may be a recessive gene, while others believe it's a codominant gene. And then other people think it's a line bred trait. In your experience, going back, you know, as long as you have been working with them, what do you think is going on with the giant gene?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I have been following the genetics on that, so I couldn't speculate. But I do see, I don't line breed mine, but I do see the bloodlines keeping true. So
okay, so giant just keeps giving you more giants, you mean? Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, it's usually what I see, you know, as far as those guys go. You know, from
what
the ones I have from Ron Trimper, yeah.
Okay. All right. Have you ever bred a giant to a non-giant that wasn't from Ron's lines?
No. Just have mine from Ron's here. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The only other big geckos I have that, you know, sometimes, you know, I get big ones of some of the carrot tails. You know, I still have some of those leftover guys, you know, from those days. And they, you know, sometimes that was a recessive, you know, trait. The carrot tail would be, you know, so that you get a normal and then a normal produce a carrot tail. And very interesting. But, yeah, they were big, too. So I should probably breed those together. I probably have. I should look and see. If I've done that.
If I recall, those were not necessarily big in bulk as much as they were long.
Oh, yes, they were long.
They were long.
Yeah, long.
It wasn't that they were just big hunking hulks. They were long.
I had one carrot tail that was just a monster. He was big and long, but mm-hmm. most of them weren't that long. Like you're saying, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think he weighed, or how long do you think he was?
Ooh, boy. Yeah, he was, you know, probably around 11, 12 inches maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And his head was just huge. You know, like Some of these, for people tuning in just now,
we're talking about leopard geckos, by the way, just so you know, just to clear it up.
Some of the ones I have now are really, they have big heads, too, like that.
Especially the males.
Yes, I'm talking, definitely the males. The males are just, they're real hulky.
Well, you know, I've got some big guys here. I mean, we're talking 11 inches and over 100 grams. They're just big. But they are not giant, and they don't have any giant influence as far as the claimed, the giant genetics. I do have a giant Max Snow Raptor male that is 12 and a half, almost 13 inches long, and is in the 130-gram range, 128.
You and I, Marcia, we've talked about we noticed that leopard geckos are just getting bigger.
They are.
And, you know, just like humans are getting bigger and taller as the generations go on.
So, well, what do you think it has to do with, Julie? Do you think it's environmental or diet or a combination of the two? Or we're just that far removed from the original, stock, if you want to call it that, that came from the Middle East? What do you think is the contributing factor for us just to be growing bigger geckos?
Well, I think there's a lot of potential, real contributing factors, and that would be the nutrition,
mm-hmm.
and the supplementation has gotten better. You know, the husbandry throughout the years has gotten better, and people also tend to eyeball bigger geckos. You know, they tend to go, oh, I want the big one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, Julie. It's true.
They're not fighting for survival anymore either. They're not, like, starving, borderline starving in nature, trying to find their next meal. So maybe
well,
that's
you know,
to
a
it.
Friend of ours, a friend of Julie and I, he's also an author in Germany, Carsten Griesheimer, got time to go out into leopard gecko territory and do field studies, which, by the way, is very difficult to do now since we're at war with the majority of the nations that, leopard geckos are indigenous to.
It's crazy. You lose your head on that.
And I also have been in touch with several troops that are out there who have been kind enough to send me photos, not only of wild specimens that they see, visually see, but what I'm interested in as well is the terrain. What are the natural indigenous conditions in which they live? It's just fascinating. But you know what? The ones in the wild, they look really ratty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't have a waiter with a plate full of mealworms coming at them every day.
Exactly. They don't go up and belly up to the mealworm bowl, rest their head on it, and eat. These guys really have to, they have to play for their supper, They really do. The majority of pictures I've seen are all, really ratty looking. In some cases, they have shed issues. In some cases, in more than half the cases, they have regenerated tails.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Julie, do you think that we're getting that far away from the leopard gecko in its natural environment to actually have a species here that is spoiled or weak or is, in any way, I mean, granted, you can't take a quote-unquote domesticated animal and put them back in the Hindu Kush and expect them to, survive.
Right. I do think that's true. I do think that they are getting, in a way, we're making them stronger and bigger. But in another way, they're losing some of their protections against disease and stuff like that,
mm-hmm,
I believe,
mm-hmm.
from the breeding process.
You think it's distress?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I definitely have seen that, you know, in the, what are they calling the leucistics now? They call them something else.
No, well, they're Murphy patternless. They are not a true leucistic, so.
Those, if there was a problem, they seem to be the ones that got it first.
Right, right. Well, the Murphy patternless, or incorrectly dubbed as leucistics, because they are not a leucistic. The Murphy
right.
patternless are found in the wild.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, they are found in the wild. An albino.
Really?
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah. There's a whole go. This isn't my show, but. Several universities in Russia have had the opportunity to go out and do a lot of field studies, especially on Eublepharis macularis and subspecies and subspecies. Murphy patternless is a simple recessive trait that is found in the wild.
Gotcha.
But so far, not a blizzard, and so far, not an albino.
Yeah, it's curious, though, that, you know, they seem to get the short end of the stick. At least, you know, I no longer keep them kind of for that reason, because they seem to not take things well, stress out easily. Regardless, they... You know, I do think that the inbreeding is the culprit.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you ladies feel like taking a few phone calls? We have some people on the line.
Julie,
sure.
Do you like talking to the masses?
Go for it.
All right. Let's take, the first caller from the 432 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, Dave, Marcia, Julie. How you guys doing this evening?
Hi.
What's up,
who's this?
This is Daryl, yeah.
Hey, Daryl.
How's your other brother, Daryl?
I've enjoyed listening to y'all's little... Hey, yeah, there you go, my other brother, Daryl. I've enjoyed listening to y'all tonight, and, you know, I think you can attest the nature of the leopard geckos in the captivity today is being domesticated. They're no longer anywhere near their wild populations. That's my take on it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Hey, do you think it's possible to domesticate a reptile?
Absolutely. Why not?
Oh, I'm not poking you with a stick here, Daryl. I'm just.
Well, I mean, we've domesticated everything in life, from chickens, dogs, cats, horses, cattle,
birds,
humans.
Yes. Yeah, you name it.
Yeah, I mean, you breed them in captivity long enough, and you selectively breed them in captivity, and then they're no longer what you started with. While they carry some of the traits,
of
you have changed them.
Any of them today we have in our collections would likely never fare well in nature if we were to just...
No, there's no doubt about it. Yeah. What do you think,
right.
Haley?
So, I mean...
I think that's true. Yeah.
Hmm.
For
you
sure.
Know, I mean,
good point.
You can do it in a relatively short period of time when you're dealing with a narrow genetic start to begin with.
You mean a narrow genetic? Are you talking? Are you referring to like a shallow gene pool?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
you look at
everything started from a very, very shallow gene pool is a good way to put it. You know, but very few animals, you know, compared to what's in nature. I mean, so everything is generated out of a shallow gene pool, and then you have then in turn. Narrowed it down more, picking out the stuff that you like or the breeder, you know, whatever they're looking for or going for. And so you narrow it down even further. And so now you have animals that's why they're bigger. That's why they're prettier. You know, everybody's breeding for color and size. You're right. I mean, it goes into people like big, so they hang on to those, and that's what they used to breed with, whether it has giant in it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you
look at
humans. You can get giants that come out of, you know, totally normal parents. It's just a mutation, so you get one that pops out into your collection and you keep it. Why, you have no giant influence, so to speak. Now you do. It's just a new giant influence.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, you know, just, you know, go off the track a little bit here, is, you know, when we talk about their natural environment and stuff, you know, they have lost some flora in their gut, no doubt, you know, from being bred selectively for so long. And, you know, the days, there used to be plenty of wild cots coming in, you know, back in the old days, you know, when I first started in the 80s and 90s, they were coming in pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nowadays, I understand,
sure,
not so much.
Well, it's
well,
almost
but,
impossible.
But even back then,
when
you had so many coming in, look at how many of them probably didn't make it. You know, back in those days, you were lucky if 10 or 20% of the stuff coming in made it.
Yeah.
And that still applies. I'm going to throw this in. That still applies for the loads and loads of African fat tails that are shipped into the United States in boxes where these animals are literally on top of each other.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's
another thing.
I mean, they're collected in the wild, and they're held for days and weeks, and then they ship. You know, I mean, some of them may have been in captivity for 6 months before you ever get them.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But, you know, a lot of supplement people are looking at probiotics for them, and that's interesting because, you know, if we can help get more, you know, strengthen them somehow or try and get some of that was found in their guts in the wild, you know, maybe we can help them out.
Well, Julie, I mean, I know that you agree that in the wild, leopard geckos in general, I mean, all reptiles in general, have a subclinical level of a whole heck of a lot of parasitic or otherwise quote-unquote harmful bacteria or organisms in their body, but they do not pose any clinical problem. Because it's a natural thing. It keeps them in check. Everything's fine. But the stress of being captured, you know, shipped, kept in captivity, and even the stress of breeding, the stress of shipping, all of those things can lower the you know, the resistance, the actual resistance that these animals have that keep this stuff at bay and cause them to start growing these organisms to grow, especially the gut flora and even gut fauna. I mean, we're talking gut fauna as far as, you know, worms and things like that you know, start growing in a disproportionate way and become a clinical problem for the animal at that point.
Right. So I was thinking that, you know, that's one way that we could help them, because they are missing out on this stuff that they used to have in their guts, and they had no problems living with these organisms.
How do we find out what that level is, or
someone's got to go to the natural environment, like
yeah.
I admire Elmer Pasch, because he did that with the New Caledonian geckos. You know, he studied the New Caledonians, like the Cresteds and the Leeches and stuff. He looked at their poop, and that's how he made the food. Is he based it on what he found in their poop?
In the wild.
In the wild or in captivity?
In the wild. So,
okay, when you say
so
in the wild, I mean he was physically collecting
the
poop in nature, not collecting the animals and keeping them in captivity till they poop. But
right, no,
he's actually
in the
collecting
wild,
them in the wild.
Samples, yeah.
Okay.
But see, we don't have that luxury.
Here's my point. There's a lot of things that we don't know. You know, you start talking about gut issues. There's and you know, there's a lot of things that we don't know that, that may be hampering them in the wild as well. And we don't even know.
Oh, yeah. A lot
That's my point. I mean,
a lot of people
most of
that
these
import,
animals are not very long lived in the wild like we
right.
like we keep them in captivity.
Yeah.
I mean,
their life aren't as long,
I bet a leopard gecko's life expectancy is less than a year on average.
You think a year? Oh, now, I don't know. I would say 3 to 5. I could argue 3 to 5, but that, again, that's just a.
I'm just talking on. Well, you look at it, for example, if you take a female that breeds in the wild, and they probably don't breed every year, and let's say she throws 10 eggs, you know, I mean, I guarantee you, if one of those or two of those make it to adulthood, you're doing good. That's my point. Once they get to adulthood, they probably live for several years, but getting there is the issue.
Yeah.
Well, that explains their little, you know, when they hatch out.
But there's several issues. I mean, A, they're being, you know, predated on by everything bigger than
mm-hmm.
they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to find something to eat is probably
right.
not the simplest task at a baby. And I think that's why they grow so fast in captivity. Because they have plenty of food, you know,
I
mean, they will grow. I mean, if you're feeding them, it's amazing to me how fast they grow.
I don't know how many people have worked with or raised Aussie species, but the leopard gecko, hands down, those offspring, like, they exponentially grow.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, where, I mean, for example, my Nephrurus or my Underwoodosaurus milli can take up to 8 to 10 months to even accurately sex because it takes them so long to develop. But, again,
right.
that's a different species. But the thing is that, you know, what we're doing here is we are not even close to replicating the leopard gecko's natural environment, which also includes their food source. We can come close, but you know what? There are not crickets or mealworms in Afghanistan or in the Hindu Kush or in the Zagros Mountains. There's locust.
Right.
There's plenty of locusts.
Well, unless you're keeping the wild types, I think that's kind of a moot point to try to keep them like they are in the wild because they are no longer a wild species.
They aren't.
Well,
you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's
so
my point.
So we cannot compare.
We're doing it. Exactly. Thank you.
We cannot compare our animals in captivity versus, you know, wild type or wild caught animals that are imported usually through Europe because we cannot directly import them because of, you
right.
know, national security embargoes and things like that.
Right.
But you got to think, okay, in the wild, they eat the bugs that eat the plants that grow in the soil that provide this perfect natural circle of you know, not only food, but supplementation.
Mm-hmm.
You see what
so
I'm saying?
They grab at the dirt, you know, when there's something wrong with them, they grab at the dirt, and the theory is that they are trying to get something that was in the ground where they're from.
Well, if they're
Absolutely.
Deficient. If they're deficient.
Mm-hmm.
But normally the plants that grow in this soil that is primarily limestone and granite, you know, limestone is very high in shell type calcium. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So then there's insects that eat those plants that are indigenous, and then the leopard geckos eat those, you know, bugs that eat the plants that are growing in the indigenous soil. And the green grass what? Grows all around, and the green grass grows all around. Anyway, sorry. But we cannot really replicate.
Well, I have a experience with a Eublepharid gecko who was directly imported, the Coleonyx elegans, which is a South American gecko.
Right.
And
right.
I got some wild caughts from this Croatian guy at the San Diego Urba Show way back, you know, in the 90s sometime. And I tried feeding them crickets. They just stared at everything. And I was like, oh, no. I tried the two main dietary staples here, and they're not interested. Not at all. So I'm like, okay. So I got the bright idea to get some waxworms. And, boy, their eyes got, like, cartoon big when I got those things out.
Right.
And once they started eating those, then I shifted them to mealworms and crickets after that.
Right.
So your goal, then, was to stimulate the feeding response.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, they can't eat these. They're too sugary. You know, they can't. They can't just eat the waxworms. So let's see what else they can eat.
That's
so,
like a diet of Baskin Robbins.
Yeah, that was terrible. But that so there must be a grub or something in their environment.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, let's see. I don't know, Daryl. I'm gonna grab another call. That was some good conversation, guys.
Good conversation,
yeah.
Daryl. Really.
All right. Y'all hang in there. I'll keep listening.
All right.
Thanks,
take
Daryl.
Care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Daryl knows his stuff. He's,
yes,
he's got
he
a,
does.
Almost a biology degree and everything. He's a smart guy. All right. Let's go ahead and grab this next caller. Caller from the, 646 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hello, guys. This is Hector. I have a question for Marcia and Julie. When you guys started, what were some of the feeders that you guys used? You know, did you guys experiment with any feeders that didn't work for you guys, or was it just mealworms and crickets from the beginning? And, you know, what were your experiences with roaches early on in the 90s?
I'll let
you
go with this, Julie.
Sure. Well, I always like to feed, you know, try whatever I could get my hands on because I think variety is important. So you need to, like, shift around the food as much as you can, you know, so they get a little break in the routine. So, and the other key is not to feed them every day, you know, to let them get hungry, too. A lot of people don't do that. And they go, my leopard gecko won't eat. And this 80-gram gecko, I go, your gecko's not starving.
you get those calls and emails too?
Oh yeah.
I know. I'm being facetious here.
The food tray, you know, the constant food tray. So anyway, I started. Mealworms were the first suggestion in the paper that I read about the cancer research. You know how they took care of the leopard geckos used for their research. They used mealworms, so I used mealworms. And then I read something, you know, that said crickets were better, and so I did crickets and you know, kind of like their weight gains better with the mealworms.
Mealworms,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and then sometimes I like to do them superworms just to give them a change of pace, and that's a big piece of meat, you know, for them. So that's kind of how, and I didn't do, my setups aren't conducive to roaches that I have leopard geckos in, you know, so I don't have a lot of experience with them. I do, you know, feed them, you know, every once in a while, and, you know, just, well, I'm sure they can't get out. And it's interesting. They seem to respond. But one piece of research that I read that was super interesting about leopard geckos in particular is that they're very cued to scent, more so than other geckos. Like the other geckos in the study were a tokay and a crested gecko in this one study, and leopard geckos can smell. So I had great success by putting the supplement that they use, that I use, on a new food item, and they would just go bang, just go right for it.
Okay, cool.
It's interesting.
I had to mute him because we're getting some feedback, but I hope that answers your question, Hector. Thanks for calling in, bud. All right, let's go ahead and grab, let's see. All right, this is Elsa. Elsa, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, you guys. This is quite a discussion. It's really blowing me away. Have you had
Hi, Elsa.
Hey, Elsa.
How you doing, guys? Have you had a chance
Good. How are you tonight?
Have you had a chance to work with Agrimanyu? Is that how you pronounce it?
Agrimanyu.
Agrimanyu. Agrimanyu.
Yes. With
okay,
a G, not Agrimanyu. It's A-G.
Oh,
Agrimanyu.
Okay.
Right.
Agrimanyu. Have you had a
exactly. You got it. There you go.
Thank you.
Hello?
Okay. She wants to know if you have any experience working with them or if that's one of the wild types that you base some of the, you know, the information off of, perhaps. I was getting a lot of feedback on her line, too, so.
Yeah,
do,
I don't
do you
have any.
Do you know anything about them?
I do not.
I
okay.
do not either, but I would love to.
Elsa, if you want to learn about Agrimanyu, listen to the show we did. It's actually a featured
Matt.
Show on the Blog Talk site. No, it's the one with John Scarborough. Wild
John Beast. And Matt both are the people to talk to about those species or subspecies.
Yep.
Without a
Either
doubt.
One of those guys. Yeah. But if you go on the Blog Talk site for Gecko Nation Radio, it's the show that pops right up in the beginning. And, you know, we did a great talk about all that kind of stuff. So you'll like that. All right. Thanks, Elsa. All right. Let's see. Got a few more
Thanks,
callers
Elsa.
Here. Caller from the 907 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey.
Hey, Marcy.
Hey, is this Marcy?
It sure is. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Marcy.
Hi, Julie. How are you? Have you been racing lately?
No, not lately. Not lately. I moved to North Carolina, so I'm just getting all settled in here. So hopefully next year I'll get some racing in.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I just called to say hello, and you definitely inspire a lot of people with your Felsumas. And I just had to say thanks to Steve for sharing my little experiment. That was rather fun. I had a lot of fun looking at the information about water crystals this afternoon, so it was kind of a little fun diversion for me.
That's a nice, quick, and dirty, straight up. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, that's good, because anytime something like that comes out, you know, as a rumor or whatever, it needs to be confronted with actual facts and research. So good job. High five.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, too. And I'd like to do actually some more research into it, because a lot of times you'll hear, you know, people, you know, putting forth that this is, you know, that this isn't very good, and, you know, making statements about a particular thing that a lot of people use. And, you know, I try to look for hardcore information, and so it's something that I'll continue to look further into, especially from what I was able to find, that it only really destabilizes at high temperatures.
So it's temperature related too, huh?
That was one of the things that I think I read, and my brain still isn't working 100% when I think it. I don't know if it's just after effects of my concussion, but I'm like, I had someone else read it for me, and I'm like, is that what I'm getting from this? And,
well, okay, Marcy, what somebody's trying to do is tell you that you need to have a scientifically based, you know, exponentially this and that within a, you know, a box and this and that in order to have anything viable as far as your results. Well, you know what? What you did was very well thought out, and it was what I call a quick and dirty. just to see. Okay.
I just wanted to satisfy my own curiosity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what you came up with is probably really valid in some ways. Okay, I spent 26 years as a chemical engineer. All right, those kind of experiments for me, I used at one time in my life I could do in my sleep. But what you did, you actually took a giant step beyond what most other people would ever even dream of doing, and that is, okay, I heard a rumor that, you know, water crystals are not good. So since I heard the rumor, it must be true, and so they spread the word. And you took it one step further. Gee, this is interesting because I feed my, you know, I use water crystals for my dubia colonies. So I want to see how this works. So you went above and beyond anybody else so far that I've seen to either prove or disprove this. So good for you is what I'm saying.
It was really fun. And it was one of the things someone said is, you can get, you know, something at the local pool store. And I had to really chuckle because it was in the thread. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of in Juneau, Alaska, and we don't have a local pool store here.
What?
Which I thought was rather fun.
We know that you natives come
at the hardware store, but yeah. I didn't feel like going out because it's really cold and rainy today.
Well, Marcy, we all know that you native Alaskans like go and lay in the snow and then run like banshees and like cast yourselves into the bay, into the sub-freezing weather. We all know that, right?
Absolutely.
We know you run around killing your own food.
I don't know how I didn't get hypothermia as a child. I really don't. We used to play in the water at the beach, and now as an adult, I've gone and put my feet in the water. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I play in the water as a child, you know?
I'm just kidding, Marcy.
I know it wasn't any warmer than it is now, so.
Well, I'm glad you did that, and it would be really cool to see, you know, some similar quick and dirty actually expanded into a more scientific type experiment and whatnot, and that was on calcium sand.
That would be really interesting too.
Well, people did a similar thing on calcium sand to see at what point does it dissolve. You know, and it doesn't under any point.
Yeah, that would be I would love to see something done on that because I really hate that it's continued to be sold as safe. That and crushed walnut, but the thing that was really interesting is one of the people that posted in the thread, I guess, works in a lab and has access to some of the acids that more resemble stomach acid. So I think she's actually going to try it. So I'm excited to see if she's able to produce different results or, you know, some other results, and hopefully
we'll
share that. So
cool. That would be great.
I'm looking forward to that. So
yeah.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
All right, cool, Marcy. Thank you for your help with that. That was a good job today.
Yeah, awesome. And Julie, I just absolutely, one of these days I will be getting some arboreals from you when I'm finally settled into my new home and have my gigantic gecko room.
Awesome. That sounds good. Happy to do it.
All right. You take care, and I'm glad you had a wonderful day, Marcia.
Oh, thanks, Marcy.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Marcia.
I'm going to say, I want to stay on and listen, Dave.
Okay.
Okay, no problems. All right, thanks. Okay, one more caller here. We got a caller from the 954 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, David. It's Barbara Santora. I've been following
hey, Barbara,
you for quite a while. I'm okay. How are you?
Doing good. Doing what I love.
I got a few problems with the little well, I have one problem, and I just wanted to bring this to your attention. You know, is there any way you can tactfully tell people not to buy geckos in a pet store? And
don't buy geckos in a pet store.
Don't be me. Had an impulse buy, and I bought one. All right? Now she has a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm immunocompromised, so the parasite that she has could probably affect me. So now I have to go to my doctor.
Oh, it's a zoonosis. Okay, what is the parasite?
Thing.
Do you know the name of the parasite?
Yeah, it's crypto.
No. Okay, first of all, the crypto that your gecko has...
Yes.
...is not transmissible. It is not a zoonose. It is not transmissible.
It's not a protozoa?
No, it is not transmissible to humans.
Okay.
It's a different crypto.
Yeah, right. Cryptosporidium is
Sporidium.
A host-specific mutant form of coccidia. Unfortunately...
Well, you know, humans can get that protozoa.
Yes,
also.
They can, but there are so many different strains of cryptosporidium.
I got you. I understand.
Yeah, there are two strains that affect reptiles, and that is, of course, the number one is Serpentis.
Right. Yeah, okay. I did a lot of research.
You cannot contract cryptosporidium.
Thank God.
So that
okay,
is nothing
well,
to worry
good
about.
Thing. All right, so let's move on to the next thing. the little baby has the parasites, and I bought her from the pet store, and that's just, like I said on the thread, I'll never do that again. Never.
Okay. I'm sorry you're going through this.
Yeah,
well,
that's
I made
rough.
A mistake. We all make mistakes.
Bored.
She was
yeah.
cute, and I bought her, and she was very sick. So, geez. You know, she was having her poop with a lot of yellow in it, and then one day when we were, like, playing... She, like, had blood and, like, pus and, oh, my God. It was,
yeah.
like, really bad.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing her back to the store, and I'm very sad about it. But I can't have a sick gecko, you know. So, So one of my ideas or one
you
of my...
You can help a sick gecko. What you cannot do is help... a gecko that is infected with cryptosporidium.
Yeah.
She you can help your other geckos by fastidious husbandry
oh,
and
my other
quarantine.
Ones are fine. This was just...
Now, how are they kept and how close are they, you know, to the gecko?
I didn't ever put them together.
Okay,
I just
sure.
don't do
sure.
that. So she was quarantined. She was in her own house. And honestly, I'm throwing everything out. I don't want anything with that infection when I get the new one because I ordered a new one from Boa Reptiles, which I think David is a part of. And
Boa Reptiles, John Scarborough. Yeah, awesome guy.
Yeah.
Sponsor of the show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I got a beautiful girl coming because I'm not good with the babies anyway. But this one... I mean, she actually, on my hand, it was a full droplet of blood and pus. So I was concerned. I was like, how could this infect me? You know,
well,
I'm immunocompromised.
No, I am immunocompromised as well, so I understand
exactly
what you're saying.
Good. Thank you. Who am
All
I
right.
talking with?
I'm Marcia from Golden Gate Geckos.
Hi, Marcia.
And I'm Julie from Ranch, Julie Bergman.
And you're, yes, Julie from Gecko Ranch is our guest tonight. First of all, I just have a question to ask real quick. How was the infected gecko diagnosed with that it had cryptosporidium?
Well, I bought her from the store on June 11th, and I watched her droppings, and I looked at her. I diagnosed her myself.
All right.
She's very sick.
Okay, let's stop right there.
Okay.
Without a bona fide, genuine...
I understand.
Okay. Cryptosporidium is a mutant form of coccidia. It's a very similar, it's almost the same, only it has, it's, you know, turned into something more critical.
Okay.
Cryptosporidium serpentis in leopard geckos is always fatal. Always. At this point.
I understand that.
Coccidia is treatable. And the
what
symptoms
is that,
are
coccidia?
Exactly the same. So that's the reason that I asked you how you came to
well,
the conclusion
okay.
that
Let
you
me
had
just
crypto.
Say this. I got this little baby from the pet store, and I put her in her own little cage, and she had her little everything, you know. I know what to do. And she just didn't eat. So I fed her the worms. She didn't like the crickets, so I fed her the worms. And when she went to the bathroom, it was black and yellow.
Mm.
So I knew she was infected.
Well, black stool generally means blood of some sort.
Well, I'm not saying black. I'm just saying it was dark, and then there was the protein part was yellow.
It's not protein. It's urates.
Right. Well, it was yellow.
That's what comes through the kidneys. It should be white.
I know.
But if it's a little on the yellow side, it means the kidneys could be compromised at some point. And if it's a little bit crystally, it could mean that they're dehydrated, which is not uncommon for starving geckos.
Yeah, I have her soaking. I'm still trying to fix her. I have her soaking in Pedialyte and warm water and oregano
okay.
oil.
You cannot, if she has crypto, you cannot fix it.
Okay.
And
I'm not sure if she has that.
That breaks my heart
to say that. But she has something.
Well,
it breaks my heart, too.
But here's what I would like to recommend, and that is to get a stool sample to a qualified veterinarian.
Right.
And I'm not talking about just a float and smear test that they do for, you know,
common. No, I know.
Common...
I think I'm going to have to do one myself.
How can you do that yourself?
I have to go to my doctor. I mean,
there
I think
go.
I
okay.
have to do. I have to test myself for parasites.
No. If your gecko is infected with any type of parasite, the only parasite that you have to worry about that could be zoonotic, which means passes between humans and animals, is pinworms.
Oh, no, we don't have that going
And those
on.
Are the most benign form of infection that you need
but
to deal with.
But she also has an anal prolapse.
Okay, that sounds to me when they have a prolapse of that nature, that they have such a large parasitic load in their intestines.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is not typical of crypto.
Okay, well, you know what, folks?
Thank
we're coming
you.
To the end
thank
of the show.
Thank you very much.
And you know what, Barbara? Maybe Marcia and you guys can talk about it during the week. Maybe she can give you a little bit more individual attention.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to talk with
you
about that.
Thank
you
very much. I just
and I'm sure Julie would, too. Julie's been through her share of trials and tribulations as well.
Me, too.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, folks, we're going to go into a little bit of overtime tonight. You guys should be able to
sure.
get into
are
the
you
show.
Up to it, Julie?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's keep going.
Okay. The live portion is going to end, but you guys will be able to hear the end of the show. Call in real quick at 646-478-5331, or if you download the show after it ends, you'll hear the whole thing. Just skip to the end part. All right, what's going on? I hear like some jingling in the background. Is somebody playing the tambourine?
No, that's my chimes.
No. Oh, that's...
I'm outside, right. And my chimes are going off. I will put myself on mute for right now.
Oh,
yeah, Marcia and I have been out there many, many times together listening to the chimes.
Okay. Well, Julie, you know, I think we probably could have, you know, we probably could do a lot more show with you. Maybe we can have you come back for part two sometime. The time
sure.
goes by so quickly. But
that would be fine,
Okay. Before we wrap things up, though, I'd like to hear about the species you're currently working with, and what do you have to offer the community as far as available geckos and stuff?
Well, right now I've got I had about a dozen young leopard geckos hatched, and they're mostly jungle, tangerine, and normal and jungle morphs. And then I also have a couple of baby giant New Caledonian geckos that are well started, and one of them is definitely sexable right now. I think that one's a male, and I should be able to verify that at about the animal's about 19 or 20 grams. And then I have some giant day geckos available who have strong immune systems, which is kind of an interesting continuation of our conversation, because a veterinarian that breeds these pointed this out, and I go, you know, I have had hardly any problems with Felsuma, and, you know, especially Grandis, they seem to be rock solid. The giant
you want to hear something crazy? You want to hear something crazy about Grandis real quick?
Sure.
I have a trio of females, and I never got a male for them. And I noticed that one of the females just got a little bigger over time, and she started just becoming a little bit more aggressive and stuff. And it turns out she turned into a male.
Aha.
Have you ever heard of that happening?
That she turned into a male?
She literally changed sexes. Yes. No bull. She went from a bona fide female to a male with the pores and everything.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you there. I think it was a latent male.
Really?
Yeah.
That's been a really latent one.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, and that can definitely happen. And I've seen that happen with leopard geckos even. Some of them just like, you know, they're like Pat on Saturday Night Live. You know, they're totally like androgynous. You know,
right.
And you're like, what is this thing, you know? There's like some bumps there, and then there's these high temperature, you know, females that come out and look a little funny with the leopard geckos. But with the grandis, yeah, sometimes it takes a while for the sexual characteristics to really develop. And that could even be suppressed by, you know, keeping them maybe too many to, you know, to a situation. Like in the wild, grandis don't appear in more than a pair.
I was going to say, they're not noted for aggregate colonies.
No, many Felsuma are, but not grandis. And Bill Love that out to me. So that's useful information. So unless you had a really huge setup, like, you know, walk-in type setup, I wouldn't keep, you know, multiples of grandis. I would just keep them in sexed pairs or two females.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's good advice. Absolutely. I thought I was yeah, it was kind of like a 55-gallon tank-sized scenario, and there was three of them in there together, and that's kind of what happened, so, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
know.
So, yeah, right. that's
okay,
the story, and then I've got something going on with the International Herpetological Society, where I'm giving a talk on the reptile business and the challenge facing people in the reptile business these days.
Oh, that's a good topic. You know, we should.
Yes,
we
it
actually,
is.
Yeah, we were talking. That's actually a really hot topic lately, in on Facebook and such. Wow, would you like to come back and offer a special episode, maybe on a Tuesday? And talk a little bit more about that, Julie?
Sure. My talk is at the IHS International Herpetological Society Symposium, and that's in July. It's in the middle of the month, and it starts, I think it's the 15th that it starts. I'd have to double-check. But you can go to their website, you know, and check that out and some of the other speakers. But, yeah, for sure, and I'm going to be, I have been, and I'm going to be speaking to many more people in the business at all levels, you know, to kind of get a pulse on what's going on right now and what we could do to better ourselves and, you know, how do we face the challenges coming from legal, you know, stuff like the laws in each state, you know, that's a whole nother topic.
My gosh.
But also, so I'm just going to touch on that briefly, but what's going on is, you know, I want to, you know, look at how the business has changed over the years, and it has changed, and then how we could use social media or other internet things to help us, you know, as tools.
Okay. Well, I can't think of anybody more qualified to do that than you, Julie.
Well, thank you, Marcia. Where am I sending the check?
No, and I think I think that's very current and apropos for today to discuss those kinds of things as far as you know, how this quote unquote business is impacted, as well as, you know, what we foresee for the future. And I can't think of anybody more qualified than you to do this.
Well, thank
that's
you.
Cool.
Thank you. I've had great conversations already to get this going, so I think it's going to be a great talk. And actually, I'm not going to be talking as much as we're going to all be networking and helping each other at the talk.
Wonderful.
Well, maybe we can schedule the show, Julie, after you actually do your talk in July, and maybe you can kind of do like a rehash of it on the air with us if you'd like to.
Yeah, like a recap.
Really, yeah.
Yeah,
so cool.
I'm very excited about it. I can't wait. Yeah, it should be very useful and fun, and also, you know, help us you know, get that sense of camaraderie from working together.
Yes, that seems to be something that's, well, some of us can work together, some of us certainly are, and then there's others that just don't play well with others, so it's, I think that's with everything, though, but, you know, and even in business, I believe that if like-minded individuals can align, even if it's behind the scenes a bit, they'll succeed and do better, and none of us can do it all by ourselves.
No.
Today especially, we need to help one another. Even if it's just a few people that can get along, that's enough, and you guys will, you know, be successful. I mean, I certainly am learning how to network with the other like-minded people and good people in the community, and those are the people you got to find.
Well,
yeah. Well, there's definitely people that are not of the same mind frame as I, so I'm not
going to... No, there aren't. There aren't, and it doesn't mean that our way is the right way. It just means that we acknowledge the differences.
Exactly.
Right, and, you know, for one type of reptile business, it's not going to work for another. But, you know, there's enough enough things going on and enough out there that we can benefit somehow from associating with each other, you know, especially when it comes that we know that is true for the animal husbandry and stuff like that. And there's also a delicate balance that occurs with, you know, profit and ethics, you know, of keeping the animals.
Yes,
that's important.
That's a touchy subject.
Absolutely, and Marcia and I have talked about that at length, you know.
For years.
Yes, and it continues.
And it will not, and it hasn't stopped yet, right?
No. So.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah.
Well, that would be great to get you back on the show, Julie, after this symposium, and you know, to that way there would be subjects and questions and answers that would come up that would be, you know, directly relevant to the topic.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
And I myself think that. I don't want to say that I am a perfect representative, if you will, of, you know, the herpetoculture, you know, community out there, especially geckos and things like that. I have been around not quite as long as you have, but you know what? You and I have got quite a bit of time under our belt, and if we haven't seen it or experienced it, we've certainly heard of it.
I think you're qualified, Marcia.
Well, and I
yes.
think, and Julie is too. Okay, but what I'm saying is that we all learn from other people.
Right.
Absolutely.
We do. And to have these kind of I don't want to say moratorium, that was the wrong word, to have these forums that are set up, you know, to talk about and, first of all, identify and discuss and, you know, put it up on the table. You know, everybody has something to contribute. Every
Absolutely.
Single one of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you just started breeding your two geckos this year or if you've been, you know, at it with multiple species like Julie has for over two decades. You know, we all have something valuable to bring to the table. And I think that it's a good thing to have these symposiums.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I can't think of anybody better than you, Julie, to send on, and I'm not speaking in terms of anybody else, but on my behalf.
Will there be a live feed there, perhaps, for the species?
I'm not sure. You could probably go to their website and check out what's going on. IHS or .net, or you can Google it pretty easily. It doesn't take mm-hmm. much effort.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely check it out. All right. Well,
cool.
Julie, I'd like to give you this opportunity to have any closing remarks that you'd like to leave us with and for our listeners, if you'd like.
Sure. It's like, you know, I appreciate your interest in reptiles and geckos in particular, and I like to talk to people about geckos. So, you know, if you have some gecko questions, you know, feel free to hit me up. You can check me out through GeckoRanch.com or the Facebook page. I update the Facebook page more for Gecko Ranch, and I put a lot of pictures on there, but Facebook, the rotten people there, have decided to throttle down everyone's page, and they want you to pay for people to see your stuff, even people
right.
that have liked you. So if you guys would just get on there every once in a while and see what's going on there, that would be the best way to see what's going on with me, because I am
mm-hmm.
definitely on there constantly posting and talking about things.
Yeah, okay,
and,
cool.
I check there, too. So if you want to send me a picture of something, that's a good way you could do that too.
Okay. Awesome. All right, great. Hey, Julie, we got to do it again. There's so much more we could talk about.
There is. And before we close, Julie, could I ask you to humbly quote the books you are authored by and some of the articles that you've written that other people may be interested in reading?
There's I think I have a list of them on my website, which is thegeckoranch.com deal. But the book that I work the most on is The Geckos, accounting of, kind of current species and stuff like that. That was published in 2006 by the AVS people, who are very good. And that's a good, kind of guide for beginner, intermediate to advanced person. For geckos, what makes a good pet gecko, the foundations of keeping geckos, which are super important before you run. And a lot of reptiles articles, dazzling day geckos. There's Eublepharan gecko, leopard gecko and Eublepharan guide that I helped write a couple chapters, three chapters in there, with Gerald Merker his wife, and another wonderful co-author, who I'm forgetting the name of right this moment. I'm sorry. that book was a while ago. But I wrote a chapter on fat tails and a chapter on cat geckos, Alerscomodes felinus, and got some really great information there. And the other chapter was on Leonic. So that's some of my writing stuff. There is a lot of writing stuff, and I oftentimes forget. So do check the website. I'm always writing articles. There are some care sheets that just got published on thereptilechannel.com. One is on the lychees Arachidactylus lycheanus, and that was a hybrid between Robbie Hamper and myself, and that came really good, I thought. So that's the latest thing I did. So,
okay, cool. That's quite a list of accomplishments. That's awesome.
Thank you.
All right.
So yeah,
keep on
herping.
Yeah, absolutely. And next time we got to hear a little more about your car racing. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Well,
she has the need for speed.
So when I was 37, I started getting interested in performance driving. So I started going to Thunderhill Raceway Park in Willows, California, and getting road racing instruction in one of my street cars, which was actually really well prepared for a road course, and that was a 97 Trans Am, really nice car, and so they kept asking me when I was going to start racing, and I laughed at them, and then they convinced me I should do it because I was spending a lot of money on my street car that I just could spend on a race car. So I got an old race car, which I didn't mind dinging up if something happened, and so from that point on, I started racing the Camaro Mustang Challenge. And so that I've campaigned a third generation car that was a 84 Trans Am, and did that for many years. And then my latest car is a 94 Trans Am. It's green with geckos on it.
So, it does. I've seen it.
Check out the website. You can see some pictures under About Us. And that car should be campaigning again. This was a moving year, so I moved from California to North Carolina, and I got engaged to a wonderful man named Jeff.
And I am so happy for you.
Yeah, and he owns
a high
performance.
And if there's a way I can get out there, I would love to perform the nuptials for you two.
Well, yeah, I was definitely going to ask you.
I'm very, very happy for you, Julie. You deserve the best. You really do. And in closing, I just want to, I want to say that all of us have a beginning. All of us come from somewhere, and that means knowing nothing. And I've had a lot of people in my life, in my career as a leopard gecko breeder, who have been extremely instrumental in my success as a gecko breeder. But first and foremost, I always go back to you, Julie.
Aww.
I always go back to Julie because Julie, like I said earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show, Julie Bergman from Gecko Ranch taught me, Marcia McGinnis from Golden Gate Geckos, how
the
to sex, how to sex a leopard gecko. So my point is this. We are not all born, we're not born all knowing. We all started somewhere, and it was from the beginning, from whatever beginning that was. Okay? And all of us have had people who have been instrumental and influential in our lives as, you know, breeders or hobbyists or in whatever element that we are in this community. And I owe Julie a lot.
Well, I owe Marcia a lot.
Well, you know what?
David and as passionate as they come, as you know, as far as you know, making sure things are done right and with a heart.
Absolutely, and I think that that's why we became friends, and I think
absolutely
that that's why another reason that we will continue to be friends throughout is because of that. Of our love for these animals in this community. So I want to personally thank you, Julie, for being such an integral part of not only my life, but as my career as a leopard gecko breeder. And I'd
like
to end on that.
I get a compliment. I'm very touched, and I could not get a bigger compliment. So thank you sincerely.
Well, you know I mean it.
I do know. Yes, and you definitely have that same place in my heart, you know.
That's good to know.
For sure. Now we're getting verklempt.
Don't start crying, ladies. Come on.
We're not. I cry easy, but I promise I'm not going to cry.
Okay.
All I feel
all
is
cool.
Joy in my heart that Julie's been on this show and has had even a slight opportunity to let the world know that she's here, she's been here, and she will continue to be here. And
yeah, we're gonna get you back on too. We're gonna get more of Julie Bergman's history and stuff out there for people to learn about. And I, you know, that's one of the things I think is important too. You know, a lot of this, like I was saying earlier, a lot of this information should not get lost, and definitely. People like you, Julie, definitely need their time and need a little bit of the spotlight. And even if it's just on our little radio show, these shows are going to be archived forever, and it may be something that people are going to turn to in the future to learn from. So, you know, it's a good thing, I think. So,
absolutely
yeah.
Good thing. And thank you for having
all
me.
Right.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
Anytime. You have
look
a
forward to talking.
Of course. Okay, cool. All right, well, I guess we'll wrap it up, folks. And, Julie, I'll let you go until we meet again.
All right, thank you so much. Have a good night, everybody.
You too. Take care.
Love you, Julie. Good night.
Did pretty good, huh, Marcia? Did good tonight, right?
Yep.
You happy about the show, how the show went?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
She Julie is an understated person. She doesn't toot her own horn a whole lot.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And yeah, I can appreciate that. She definitely has the, you know, definitely has a long history of accomplishment. And
oh, my God.
And
no,
to, yeah.
It's not just the history. It's the passion.
Mm-hmm.
It's the yeah. love of these animals in the purest sense. And she has the highest level of ethics.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
But the thing is, we're not on the air, right?
Yes, we are on the air.
We are on the air?
Yeah, I didn't finish the show yet.
All right. Well,
right now.
I just want to say that I have had the privilege and honor of being a guest not only at her home, but at Gecko Ranch. She's had a couple of open houses where she opened up Gecko Ranch to the public to come in, and I came and spent the night and helped her, you know, just do the typical cleaning duties and yada, yada, yada. But it's her level of passion and, the woman loves these animals. You can't be around her for more than 2 minutes without realizing how much she loves these creatures. When she packed up and moved to the west, to the East Coast, which means that I'm not going to be able to, I mean, before we were about an hour and a half drive away from each other. She's been at my house and had dinner and spent the night, and I've been up there to her house and had dinner and spent the night. You know, I helped her pack all her leopard geckos for this move. And I know that it was a difficult thing for her, and it was difficult for me to know that she's just not going to be as accessible to me as she has been. I'm not going to be able to see her at local shows like I took for granted. But all I can say is that once in a lifetime, maybe a couple of times in a lifetime, somebody comes into your life and shares your passion and validates everything that you feel and think and do. And that doesn't go away. That never goes away, David.
Mm-hmm.
When there's people like this in this hobby, in this day and age when there's so much strife and pettiness, that there
well,
are,
don't even give it its due. Only positive. I'm here.
No,
you know?
I don't even want to give it its due. What I'm getting at here is that, you know, to have the privilege of considering Julie Bergman from Gecko Ranch not only a past mentor, but as a wonderful friend.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I think that was good dynamics, and I do, being that you guys know each other so well. And I want to do it again. We'll do it again after her some
good
in July. Yeah. So all right.
Good.
Gonna,
get her on.
She's
not really one of those ones out there flapping her wings and tooting her horn. You know, but she is definitely a driving force. Not only as just a pioneer in this. Hobby.
I think she could add a lot to radio, too. Like, we could have a lot of good discussions about, especially about the business thing I'm excited about, because that topic today is confusing a lot of people. There's a lot of people trying to figure it out. And I think the whole business part of herpetoculture is in flux right now. So I think a show like that is kind of instrumental. And Tuesday, Matt's coming on to talk about auctions. Auctions are a hot topic.
Yeah, some people are sick of them, and some people are woohoo. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna talk a little bit about that, and I'm gonna open up the phone lines for that, so you guys can call in if you wanna call in and talk about auctions. If you want to tell Matt anything or ask him anything, you're welcome to call in. If you want to call up and say auctions stink, you can do that too, whatever you guys want. So that's Tuesday night show. it's open for you. But, Marcia, I want to thank you very much for being my co-host tonight. I'm going to wrap things up now, and, yeah, we got to do it again. We'll do it again soon.
We do. And, David,
right,
you know
cool.
I love you with all my heart.
And
I totally appreciate the effort, the care, and the sincerity that you have in this hobby or business, whatever you want to call it. In this let's just call it the community, even though that's kind of a buzzword these days. But I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be supportive in any way that I can.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And let you know how much I believe in this. I truly do.
Keep doing it. We keep doing it as long as we can, you know. And someday when I don't do it anymore, so hopefully somebody else will take it over.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But this is all of this.
It'll be huge.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh,
it's
yeah.
growing every day, Marcia. It's growing. I can't even stop it anymore. It's like, you know, in the beginning, like when you start something, you're like trying to get it going, and you're struggling, and you're nervous. You don't know if you're gonna get listeners. You don't know if people are gonna listen to the show. Well, this show is incredible. I mean, it's getting
it is incredible.
Huge. It's huge. The people are listening to it all over the world now. The group is blowing up exponentially, and you know the people in the group are listeners to the show, and it's just I don't know. I'm just watching the downloads just grow and grow and grow with each new episode. So, I don't know.
I'm excited.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Too big, though. Yeah, hey. I'm afraid. I don't want it to get too big. I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle it.
You know what? You can handle it, David, no matter what.
Oh,
and if you can't or if you feel like you can't, there are a plethora of people out there, myself included, that are more than willing to pick up whatever heavy piece that you're having to carry.
All right. Well, I may take you up on that someday.
Well, you know I'm here. I hope that all the listeners out there know that I'm here. Yes, I am. I'm retiring. But this is so much a part of my life that I don't think it will ever go away.
Yeah,
it's because I
You're
care
anyway.
And you care. David, you care.
Well, somebody's got to, you know, I think a lot of people out there care, you know, and I think, that's a good thing. And, you know, just getting those types of people to congeal is what I'm after.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
So.
I agree.
So. All right.
But
well, I'm just
thrilled to have Julie on the show, and hopefully the listeners out there got a glimpse or a hint of what she's about. And I have the utmost respect, and through that respect, I've developed a very deep love for Julie Bergman from Gecko Ranch.
That's awesome. I know, and you could tell. All right, we got to wrap it up, Marcia.
Okay.
Until next time, and thank you so much. And I'll be in touch very soon.
It's a pleasure as always, David. Good night, everybody.
Okay. All right. Take care. Love you. Good night.
Love you, too.
All right, folks. Just going to play my outro. I'll be coming right back with the closing remarks, and I'm going to play a cool song. Check it out.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. The jazz music you heard tonight was generously donated and created by Jeremy Turgeon of J&D Reptiles. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for the great musical pieces. You can check out Jeremy at J&D Reptiles on YouTube and on Facebook. And a very special thank you to our news anchor, graphic designer, and audio tech, Steve Barker. All the graphics, audio sponsor plugs, and music overlays were assembled by Steve. Check out Steve on YouTube at BC Barker Creations. He has some terrific videos for the herp community with amazing geckos and snakes.
Please support the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance and USARC. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to support both of these organizations. Please donate to USARC so that they have the funds needed to legally protect pet owners' rights nationwide. You can donate to the USARC Legal Defense Fund at www.usarc.org. If you would also like to learn about advocacy and how you can take action on a state and local level, please subscribe to the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance newsletter and blog at www.usherp.org.
All right, folks. Did a great show tonight. It was a long show. Got a lot out there. And I just want to thank our guest, Julie Bergman, and, of course, my co-host, the lovely Marcia McGinnis. And, of course, all the listeners and the people in the chat room. You guys are great. And I just want to say that the history of leopard geckos in particular is very interesting. And I'm going to do my best to highlight and bring as much of that history back and at least document what I can on GNR for you folks, okay? Because I do believe that this show will have a history and it will endure in some form even well into the future, okay? So thank you all for supporting what we do here. And Tuesday show, all about auctions. We got Matt on from Sassabeck Reptiles. He's doing a lot of auctions, and it's causing some controversy. And, you know, it could be the new thing, the new way of doing things, or is it just because the times are tough? We're going to get into the nitty-gritty of it. We're going to talk about his experience and what he's seen in the market and how the market's developed in his time doing this, and we're going to talk about auctions in general and see how they affect things. And we want to hear from you guys. We want to hear your opinions on auctions, how you feel about them, love them, hate them, whatever it is. Call in Tuesday night. I'll be posting the link in the Gecko Nation group and on the Facebook page very soon. Okay, now, before I play the song, I just want to mention our amazing sponsors. Dale, if you guys are going to any of the East Coast shows, make sure you mention Gecko Nation Radio with Dale's Bearded Dragons. You're going to get 10% off any of your reptile supplies and your food. They sell all kinds of food from Goliath hornworms, dubia roaches, anything you need. They have exoterras, all kinds of supplements. Anything you could possibly need, they have it. Foggers, stuff like that. Make sure you see them. Also, abdragons.com, awesome source for dubia roaches. Very healthy, amazing quality feeders for your insect-eating reptiles. Mention gecko. Use the word gecko, all in caps, at checkout for 5% off your order. And they have FlexWatt. Eat it. Geckoboa.com is the king of wild types here in the U.S. John Scarborough does an amazing job. So check out geckoboa.com on Facebook also. All right, Supreme Gecko. Check out Wally Kern. Amazing bay geckos, cresties, and little tiny micro geckos. And he's got the food and everything you need for him, too. So check out supremegecko.com. Ohio Gecko, Thad, just been making some amazing new geckos this season. Really interesting morphs. He saw a couple deerites, super deerites, and he's always posting something interesting. He's got some beautiful tangerines. So check out ohiogecko.com for some awesome leopard geckos and fat tails. Rainbow Mealworms is the biggest worm farm in the world, and we are proud to have them as our sponsor here. They supply most of the large-scale breeders and small-scale breeders with their feeder mealworms and superworms. So check out rainbowmealworms.net, not .com, it's .net, okay? And order your stuff today. Reptiles Express, you guys are shipping animals anywhere in the U.S., make sure you check out Reptiles Express. They are the best in customer service and in price for shipping your animals via FedEx. All right, Ron Tremper. Gotta love Ron Tremper, the king of leopard geckos. Nobody's done more for leopard geckos in the last 30 years than Ron, and he's brought us so many great morphs like the Giants, the Bandits, the Tremper Albinos, all that stuff. Ron is a legend, a living legend, and he's coming out with even more stuff. He's not stopping anytime soon. So check out leopardgecko.com and on the App Store, you can download Leopard Gecko Care and Leopard Gecko Pro. And he's got a few other apps, too, to help you out. GiantLeopardGecko.com is run by Keith Kagans, and Giant Leopard Gecko is exactly what it says. They're big geckos. So if you guys like giants, Keith is specializing in some very colorful examples of giant leopard geckos and other species. He's got crested and fat tails as well. GiantLeopardGecko.com is happy to have them on board. Last but not least, Marcy from MS2 Premium Chow, the best food for your feeder insects. You are what you eat. Make sure you're feeding your insects the very best so your insect-eating reptiles get the very best. And that's MS2 Chow. All right, folks, it's been a great show. Check out this song, and we will see you Tuesday night for a special edition of Gecko Nation Radio. Later.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. Yes, you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love you and the way you look tonight. With each word, your tenderness grows, tearing my fear apart. And that laugh wrinkles your nose, touches my foolish heart. Lovely, never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Touches my foolish heart. Lovely, don't you ever change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Just